Benjamin Norton Bugby, Sacramento Champagne King, written and spoken by Kevin Knauss. Chapter 7, Natoma Expansion, Scandals, Tragedy, 1866-1869. Land Speculator. While Bugby was expanding his vineyard and winemaking operations, he was also doing a little land speculation outside of Folsom and El Dorado County areas. In 1862, when Bugby was sheriff, he bought the west quarter lot at 5th and K Streets in Sacramento from Daniel Sizer and Eli Mayo. Daniel Sizer had also come over with Bugby from the East Coast in 1849. The lot was in the same block where he had his furniture store 10 years earlier. He invested $800 to buy the lot and then sold it in 1865 for $350 to J. E. Parker. In April of 1866, Bugby bought 162 acres from the Joseph L. Folsom estate in the land grant Rancho Rio de los Americanos. The subdivision was known as Norris 162.13A. The deed notes that the land was in the southern part of the rancho, as depicted on an 1865 map drawn by F. J. Arnold. The physical boundaries were given as beginning at the point from which an oak tree 42 inches in diameter, marked BTF, bears south 72 and 3 quarters, east 2.9 chains, running thence south 89 and a half west, 59.77 chains, thence north 1 and a half east, 27.87 chains, thence east 58.25 chains, thence south 1.5 east 27.10 chains to the place of the beginning. The Rancho Rio de los Americanos boundaries on the 1866 patent map begin with the western boundary at an oak tree on the American River. It is unclear from the deed if that oak tree and the one marked BTF are one and the same. In a confirming deed entry, many of the subdivisions listed as being sold in 1866 refer to the buyer's name as the subdivision. For instance, the sale of 82 acres to F. Routier is listed as the Routier 82.46A. Bugby obviously had bought a subdivision of land that was originally recognized for Norris. But was this the same Samuel Norris who acquired the Mexican land grant Rancho Del Paso and Rancho San Juan in the 1850s? Samuel Norris decided to establish Norristown on the south side of the American River, east of Sacramento, and not on his property. The town never took off, reverted to farmland, and was referred to as Norris Ranch in 1858. In 1866, the state agricultural commissioners were touring California looking for a suitable location for an agricultural, mining, and mechanical arts college. The commissioners visited Norristown, described as being 4 miles from the city of Sacramento. The commissioners decided to select a site in Berkeley and merged with the existing College of California in 1868. Bugby was close to the agricultural commissioners from his work promoting California vineyards and entries at the state fair. He may have known that the commissioners were going to be looking at land along the American River. Whether the land Bugby bought was located near Norristown or another location is not clear. He may have just been speculating on land with the hopes that the agricultural college would be located nearby. Bugby had no interest in land in that area since he had left the farm at Salisbury Station. All of his efforts in agriculture focused on his El Dorado County properties. The subdivisions being sold by the Folsom Estate came with financing. To purchase property, the buyer had to have 25% of the price as a down payment, and the remaining balance was due in 12 months at 10% interest. Bugby bought the Norris subdivision for $3 per acre for approximately $486. He sold the property to Samuel Dowden in July 1867, 15 months after he bought it, for $300. California vineyard expansion's impending glut. Grapes, raisins, and wine look like a good bet to California farmers, and the acreage devoted to vineyards increased steadily through the mid-1860s. The downside for the viticultural industry was that few of these farmers had any knowledge or experience with growing grapes. Early statistics pointed to a future grape glut. One estimate was that California would have 10 to 15 million grape-bearing vines in production for 1866. Bugbee's Natoma Vineyard operation in 1865 had 44 acres with 32,000 vines. He produced approximately 10,000 pounds of raisins, 8,000 gallons of wine, and 1,000 gallons of cognac brandy in 1865. The drumbeat to plant vineyards continued even in the face of overplanting and the possibility of overproduction. Economic studies were promoting a move away from purchasing recently surveyed government land at $1.25 per acre for gold and copper mining and instead planting the land in vineyards. The analysis showed a higher rate of return based on an expected grape yield and price per ton over the same capital being invested into hard rock mining. A detailed return on the investment analysis estimated the cost of planting 30 acres of land at $1.25 per acre over a six-year period to be $10,000. At the end of year six, making 28,000 gallons of wine would produce gross revenue of $32,000 per year. After subtracting production costs, the vineyard owner would net $13,000 per year. A review of the analysis highlighted men such as Bugbee, who had taken old mining property and were making an excellent return on their investment with vineyards to produce raisins, wine, and brandy. As the Daily Alta California pointed out in May 1866, the placer mines in the foothills had been exhausted, and the men occupying the land had turned their attention to agriculture. Based on a rough estimate of 2 million grapevines bearing fruit in Sierra Foothill counties, it was estimated that 150,000 gallons of wine would be made in 1866. Later in 1866, the Sacramento Daily Union noted that with an estimated 25 million grapevines coming into full production within a couple of years, leading to increasing amounts of wine being produced, there was little organized activity to increase the wine market beyond California. Quote, "A strange apathy seems to possess the great mass of the wine growers of California, who, while generally aware that the property of the wine interest is soon to be dependent on an export demand, yet take no measures, however simple, to stimulate or introduce the sale of their wines in foreign markets. At the present time, there are at least 25 million vines and cuttings planted in the state, the whole of which will be in full bearing in 5 years and will produce a quantity of wine far in excess of the domestic demand for the entire Pacific coast. Many of the producers already complain that wine is being made in advance of the trade demand, and this state of things promises to increase until the wine-growing interest is seriously damaged, unless exportation to foreign ports relieves the market." Unquote. In a small marketing effort to develop wine markets outside of California, Bugbee sent 4 cases of assorted wines to the International Exposition held in Paris, France. He also continued to send samples of his raisins and wines to regional newspapers and back to the Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C. Bugbee must have been overjoyed when he received an order from champagne producer Louis Duval for an assortment of his wine to be sent to France. The European order must have greatly boosted Bugbee's confidence in his winery enterprise. In April of 1868, he had expanded his operations to boost the production of sparkling wine or champagne. He also hired a superintendent with experience working for a German producer of sparkling wine to manage his operations. The new employee had recently come to the United States from Europe, so Bugbee now had some European experience for crafting his wines. Who could deny that, within a few short years of turning his full attention to his vineyard operations, Bugbee had built a substantial operation from raisins to wines, all on his land? His success and experience did not go unnoticed. Bugbee was invited to sit on 3 standing committees of the State Agricultural Society investigating reporting on the advancement of the wine and spirit industry. On cultivation of the grape and pruning the vine, he served with I.N. Hoag of Yolo, Robert Chalmers of El Dorado, George West of Stockton, B.D. Wilson of Los Angeles, J.E. Snyder of Sonoma, J.E. Nickerson of Lincoln, G.N. Sweezy of Marysville, L.J. Rose of Los Angeles, and Dr. Strinstall of Contra Costa. On winemaking and clarification of wine, he met with A. Harassi of San Francisco, Craig of Sonoma, George Gosinger of San Francisco, Matthew Keller of Los Angeles, B.D. Wilson of Los Angeles, Robert Chalmers of Coloma, J.E. Nickerson of Lincoln, George West of Stockton, J. Strinsel of Martinez, Jacob Knott of Sacramento, and A. Eberhardt of San Francisco. On manufacture of brandy from the grape, his fellow members were General Nagel of San Jose, George Johnson of Sacramento, L.J. Rose of Los Angeles, Robert Chalmers of Coloma, O.W. Craig of Sonoma, and Charles King of St. Helena. Through his promotion of California viticulture, Bugbee emerges as one of the leading voices for California agriculture. He views it almost as his mission or destiny to be an agricultural ambassador for California. In December of 1865, he forwards samples of his Kona variety oranges and samples of his raisins to the Commissioner of Agriculture in D.C. as evidence of what California can produce. The new gold is California agriculture in Bugbee's vision. At the 13th Annual State Fair, he took premiums for his white and red wines, plus awards for Best Exhibition of Grapes and Wine. In 1866, the Natoma Vineyard produced 200 tons of grapes with an estimate of producing 15,000 gallons of wine, 3,000 gallons of brandy, and 1,000 boxes of raisins. By the end of the year, Bugbee had planted 76 acres of his property in grapevines and was employing 17 men to tend the vineyard and produce the wine. Bugbee's vineyards had become his sole source of income, and he was doing pretty well. He had a house in Folsom, another house within the Natoma Vineyard, plus a fairly impressive home on a hill that overlooked the vineyard and the South Fork of the American River. In 1867, Bugbee expanded his nursery operation and started advertising 100,000 grape cuttings for sale. Instead of trying to handle all of the orders himself, he enlisted three other agents from San Francisco, Stockton, and Marysville to market his nursery stock. But he also had competition, as other vineyardists started to advertise grape cuttings from their farms as well. Mediocre California wine. In an effort to add national validity to what California thought were wines rivaling the best European products, numerous vineyards from throughout the state sent samples of their soil and best wines to the United States Agricultural Department back in Washington, D.C. The results did not provide confirmation that California was producing superior wines. The report concluded, "The committee are of the opinion that many of the samples submitted did not fairly represent the vineyards from which they were obtained, either because of very defective corking, or because of the wine being bottled too soon after fermentation, or from other defective handling. Whatever may be the cause, it seemed unjust to pronounce any opinion upon the merits of wines which were plainly unfit for drinking. For this reason, the committee do not express any other opinion than just remarked upon a great majority of the samples submitted to them." The soil analysis from Bugbee's vineyard also indicated the soil was marginal at best. The report noted the shallow soil comprised of clay, slate, with a depth from 0 to 4 feet. The soil of Bugbee is a soil of indifferent quality as regards the constitution and not capable of being benefited much by the slate rock on which it rests. After reading the soil analysis, the local newspaper reported that it would be called poor soil, yet it produces the finest grapes. However, a later report from State Agricultural Society Standing Committee on Cultivation of the Grape and Pruning of the Vine in 1872 stated that the sort of soils prevalent at the Natoma Vineyard were just fine for grapes. Quote, "No vineyard should be planted on the rich alluvial soil of our river bottoms, with the exception of producing good wine, nor are the small valleys in the foothills as favorably for this purpose as the less fertile soil of the surrounding elevations. A subsoil of broken decomposed lime or sandstone, slate or granite, with evidences of volcanic debris, is undoubtedly the best. The vast quantities of redlands of the second elevation from our river bottoms and extending back to the foothills in all portions of the state are well adapted to the growth of the grape for the table, for raisins, and for wines and brandies, but for the light table wines, a more elevated location is deemed preferable. Contradicting recommendations for soil were as common as the different cultural practices a vineyard manager might employ. Every farmer did things a little differently, sometimes yielding the same results. Bugbee generally preferred planting grape cuttings when expanding his vineyard as opposed to planting a cutting that had already rooted in a separate nursery after a year. He didn't want to transplant the rooted vine, whereas some farmers preferred the transplant. This was highlighted in a report from the State Agricultural Society's Standing Committee, Cultivation of the Grape and Pruning of the Vine. There seems to be a considerable difference of opinion and practice between the different members of your committee as to whether it is better to plant cuttings in the vineyard where they will not again be disturbed by transplanting, or to plant them in beds for rooting to be lifted carefully at 1 year of age and transplanted permanently in the vineyard. Mr. Snyder, Bugbee, and Sweezy practiced the former course, with some exceptions, while Mr. Chalmers and Nickerson practiced the latter, and urged strong reasons for it. Bugbee takes the precaution to plant two cuttings in each hole, to ensure a growing vine, placing the bottoms in opposite sides of the hole, so as not to interfere with the roots of the one while lifting out the other, the following spring, in case both grow. Soil analysis aside, some of Bugbee's wines did rate a mention within the California State Agricultural Society report for years 1870 and 1871, if only to note potential and not necessarily quality. Of the red wines, the Red Tremenner, Bugbee, 1863, the Red Verdello, Bugbee, 1865, and the Muscatel, Perkins, Stern & Company, are worthy of mention rather as giving promise for the future than as realizing the proper qualities of a sweet wine. If the less than sterling report on California soils or the wine being produced gave Bugbee or any other California vintner a moment of pause, it was short-lived. That the vintners had gone to the trouble of submitting soil and wine samples demonstrated how serious they were taking their agricultural enterprises. They all knew that a government report would not determine their destiny. As long as they were selling product and earning money, the California winemakers would continue growing grapes. Mechanics Institute. California was taking note of Bugbee's involvement in the development of a fully integrated winery. With the exception of the wine casks used for fermenting wine, everything else had to be designed, acquired, and built locally for the processing of tons of grapes, crushing, fermentation, and finally bottling. A winery is a manufacturing plant. A certain amount of mechanical familiarity was needed to construct such a facility. One of the early promoters of the art of mechanization was the Mechanics Institute in San Francisco. In addition to organizing an annual mechanics fair to display the latest mechanical applications and the resulting products, the Mechanics Institute maintained a library so men could learn from others who had committed their designs in a print format. They also became involved in promoting California ingenuity and its potential. In 1867, the Mechanics Institute held a contest offering a $1,000 premium for the best essay on resources of California and best method of developing the same. One half of the cash award to the winner and the balance from the first proceeds from the sale of the successful work, which was to be published by the Mechanics Institute. All the essays were to be reviewed and voted upon by an esteemed panel of judges, one of whom was B.N. Bugbee. Sadly, all the essays were destroyed in the 1906 San Francisco earthquake and resulting fire. Bugbee was not the only grower of grapes along the American River. Directly to the west of him were Henry Metz and Andrew Trey's vineyards. Another gentleman engaged in viticulture at Beale's Bar was Lazarus Seffer, a native of Austria. In 1867, Bugbee and A.P. Catlin, one of the original organizers of the Natoma Water and Mining Company, sponsored Lazarus Seffer to become a naturalized citizen of the United States. Fire at the winery. As generous as Bugbee was with his time in helping out fellow farmers, it appears there were some people that either did not like him or possibly his success. On the evening of July 17, 1867, Bugbee's winery was set ablaze. One of the wine cellars caught fire, and 12,000 gallons of wine and brandy were destroyed. The estimated loss was between $8,000 and $9,000. Bugby did have fire insurance, but it was still a setback for his operations. So convinced was he that the fire was not an accident, Bugby took out an advertisement offering a $500 reward for the arrest and conviction of the person responsible for the arson attack. Bugby had arrested many men during his tenure as Granite Township Constable and Sacramento County Sheriff. He even had to oversee the execution of two murderers while sheriff. There was no shortage of people who may have wanted to harm him or derail his success. Another irritant to some men was Bugby's employment of Chinese immigrants at his vineyard, where he employed as many as 25 Chinese laborers. In discussing labor relations, he pointed out that Chinese were considered competent, trustworthy, and faithful. But there was a growing anger and resentment in the community and the state against men like Bugby who employed Chinese immigrants. This anti-Chinese fervor would glow even brighter in the 1880s. On September 2, 1867, Benjamin Norton Bugby woke to his 40th birthday. He was a leading authority on viticulture and winemaking in California. Apart from the arson at his wine cellar, his business was good. He was friend or acquaintance to many of the leading men in California politics and business. He was campaigning to be elected Sacramento County Sheriff again. While some political drama swirled around him, he had achieved more in the 18 years since he came to California than most men would attain in a lifetime. Even with fire damage at the Natoma Vineyard, Bugby was able to enter his grapes, raisins, and wine at the 14th State Fair. He walked away with first premium of $3 for his Tokay grapes, best display of raisins, $15, and awards for best claret wine and brandy made from grapes 2 years old. Later in the year, Bugby would be awarded a gold medal from the State Agricultural Society for his exhibition and promotion of raisins from his vineyard. The gold medal would be featured in an 1868 advertisement for Bugby's Natoma Wine and Brandy, which failed to mention the award was for raisins, not wine or spirits. He also managed to rebuild part of his winery operation by the fall harvest and crush with an ability of producing over 12,000 gallons of wine in 1867. But if it was not fire ravaging Bugby's business, it was the unpredictable autumn weather. An intense rainstorm hit the Central Valley in early October. Bugby's workers had just picked the Fajeras Agos grapes and prepared them to dehydrate into raisins in the normally warm California sun. The unexpected rain, cool weather, and high humidity destroyed the prospects of curing the grapes into raisins. Bugby quickly gathered as much of the harvest as possible and started producing brandy with them. This marked a soft turning point for the Natoma vineyards. Bugby's wine production was increasing along with orders both domestic and foreign. In future years, he would turn more of his capital and energy toward making wine and spirits and less to table grapes and raisins. Bigler Assessor Appointment. In the winter of 1867, Bugby was greeted with the news that he had been nominated by the President of the United States as California's 4th District Internal Revenue Assessor. This was a surprise to Bugby because he had never sought the position and had not talked to any elected official about the job opening. Within a few short weeks, the presidential nomination, which had to be confirmed by the Senate, would turn into a vitriolic political drama centered on Bugby's loyalty to the Union. One of the jobs of an assessor in an internal revenue district was to calculate the taxes for the excise laws of the United States government. This meant visiting property and assessing what activities and inventory were subject to federal taxes, such as those on wine and brandy. Bugby was assessed $145.35 for an inventory worth $4,844.30 in 1863. In 1864, he spent a couple of months working as an auctioneer, for which he was assessed $3.33. He was assessed $10 for being a manufacturer of alcohol spirits and an additional $50 for 1,000 gallons of wine in 1864. The assessor for each of these levies was John Avery. Bugby was a good candidate for the assessor position. He had spent years collecting taxes as sheriff of Sacramento County, and he had also paid federal revenue taxes through business operations. Unfortunately, as the political brawl between the long hair and short hair Union Democrats demonstrated in 1865, national and local politics were much divided at the time, and all nominations by President Johnson were heavily scrutinized by the Senate. When Abraham Lincoln ran for a second term as president as a Republican, he selected Andrew Johnson, a Democrat, as his vice president to broaden his base and display national unity. Andrew Johnson was a Southern Democrat who supported the Union, but not necessarily full equality for former slaves. When Lincoln was assassinated, Johnson became president on April 15, 1865. He was still viewed as a Southern Democrat by the Republican majority in Congress. Johnson did not do himself any favors with the Republicans by opposing the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, which gave citizenship to former slaves. Former Democratic California Governor John Bigler had failed to win a seat in Congress and was effectively out of work. In 1866, he had his brother William Bigler, former Pennsylvania governor and senator, lobby President Johnson to appoint him as California's 4th District Internal Revenue Assessor for the federal government, pushing out John Avery, who had served since 1863. The fact that John Bigler was a Democrat who supported slavery and was now being nominated to a federal job did not go over very well with California's Union Republican Senator John Conness. Senator Conness decided to halt the confirmation of Bigler to the assessor position. In December 1866, Bigler wrote to the senator to plead his case for confirmation. Bigler argued that while Senator Conness may find his appointment distasteful, John Avery's removal was welcomed by many in the 4th District, including the city of Sacramento. Avery refused to turn over his internal revenue records to Bigler when he assumed the office before his Senate confirmation. Bigler blamed all difficulties with performing the duties of assessor on the lack of cooperation of the previous assessor and assistant assessors. Bigler also countered the notion that he would only appoint rebel sympathizers. He maintained that all the applicants for assistant assessors were true friends of the Union. There was considerable pressure on Senator Conness to stop the appointment because California Governor Lowe, Comptroller Alton, and Attorney General McAuliffe were lobbying him to squash the confirmation of Bigler. Senator Conness replied to Bigler's letter in late January of 1867, after the Senate had already rejected Bigler's confirmation. In his reply, Conness recounted how President Johnson told him that it was Bigler's brother who recommended him for the job. He ridiculed Bigler, a former California governor, for being no friend of the Union and a person who lacked the capacity to understand the importance of great political issues, namely the institution of slavery. Shortly after Senator Conness replied to Bigler's letter, he advised President Johnson to nominate Bugbee for the position of assessor. Conness knew Bugbee because he had also mined for gold on the South Fork of the American River when he came to California and was originally, like Bugbee, a member of the Democrat Party. Unfortunately, Senator Conness must not have been in touch with the politics of Sacramento County before he persuaded Johnson to nominate Bugbee. Just as there was a coordinated effort to sink the Bigler nomination, local Union Democrats and Republicans worked to scuttle Bugbee's confirmation. One of the first darts thrown at Bugbee was his support of Democrat J.C. Goods for a district attorney and James Lansing for the sheriff in a prior election. The Sacramento Bee went after Bugbee in an editorial for being little better than a Bigler appointment. Quote, "The bully has not yet been subdued, but repeated chastisements are having their effect upon his promises, which, like all his kind, he makes only to be broken whenever opportunity offers. But Congress is the master of the situation, and if the president's race is not nearly run, his power is fast falling to zero. He has professed of late to have some respect for the Senate, but he has an awkward way of showing it. It was that the other day that one of his appointees for this coast, ex-Governor John Bigler, who was nominated to the assessorship of the 4th California District at the special importunity of his brother William Bigler of Pennsylvania, was rejected by the Senate on political grounds. And now the president, persisting in his wrongdoing, adds further insult to the Senate by naming for that same place B.N. Bugbee, who works and votes with John Bigler, and who, therefore, on political grounds, is equally obnoxious to the Union people of California. We understand that Bugbee's name was sent to the president by Honorable John Conness, and to him that belongs the glory. Unquote. Bugbee was irked at the vitriol of the attacks against him. He felt his honesty with his voting record was being held against him in absence of the facts. He replied to the Sacramento Bee, and in particular James McClatchy, in an open letter in the Sacramento Daily Union. Quote, to the public, McClatchy, editor and one of the proprietors of the Bee, attempts to rob me of my reputation as a union man. For those who do not know us both, no reply to his slander is necessary. But for the information of strangers, I will give a plain statement of facts. Since the formation of the Union Party, I have been a member of it and voted for its nominees. In 1863, I was a candidate before the Union Convention of this county for sheriff. So was McClatchy. To prevent my nomination, McClatchy's friends bolted the convention and returned only when they secured my defeat and his nomination. I voted and worked for him, and he was elected, although he fell some 700 votes behind the balance of the Union ticket. In 1865, we were both candidates again before the Union County Convention. When he and his friends, fearing they could not control the convention, bolted the Union Party and called a bolters convention at Turnverein Hall. I was not nominated for sheriff, but Rooney, a Union man, was. Prior to the day of election, Rooney, the Union candidate for sheriff, withdrew, as also Taylor, the Union candidate for district attorney. On the day of the election, there being for these two offices no regular Union candidates, I voted for Lansing and Goods, in preference to the two bolters from the Union Party who had received nominations outside of the Union organization. I have no apologies for this course. I thought I was right then, and I think so still. I would do it again, and have no regrets for it, except that by it I was instrumental in feeding McClatchy by aiding to give the Bee the sheriff's and district attorney's printing, which that paper now has. The telegraphic dispatches to the press say that the president has nominated B.N. Bugbee, or J.C. Buckbee, to the place of federal assessor in this district. If this means me, this is all I know about it. I have not sought the office, either by personal application, petition, or letter. I have no reason to expect it from the president. I have been a member of the Union League from the time of its organization. I was president of the first Union Club at Folsom, organized when the rebellion broke out. I went on the bond of the state for arms to be distributed to loyal men to prevent an uprising of secessionists in this section of the country where I live. I was sheriff of this county for 2 years and 5 months directly after the breaking out of the rebellion, during McClellan's blundering when secessionists hoped to involve the state in the war, and government agents and officers of the Union League, if it were necessary, which it is not, can certify as to the exercise of the power which the law gave me to preserve peace and maintain the ascendancy of the government. It would not become me to speak of labors and aid to the Sanitary Commission and Freeman's Bureau during the war, or that I was an abolitionist before the Emancipation Proclamation. I have consistently supported a radical Congress as against the President's policy, and if the dispatch of appointment has reference to me, I still support Congress as against the President. I would not give up my principles for this or any other place. Having said this much, permit me to add that, to people who know me and are familiar with our local political quarrels, the course of the proprietors of the Bee in permitting McClatchy to vent his private revenges for the defeat of his re-election to the office of sheriff in the columns of that paper is hardly consistent with dignified journalism. I wish further to add that to be called disloyal or published as a copperhead is, in my opinion, as great an insult as to be branded as a liar or to have my face publicly slapped, and I shall hereafter act in accordance with this view of the case. Unquote. The Sacramento Bee went on to connect Bugbee to the unpopular President Johnson in a follow-up editorial. They accused Senator Conness of not knowing the true B.N. Bugbee. Quote, there was much speculation in town as to who were Bugbee's endorsers for a federal appointment. The friends of that gentleman exercised themselves industriously upon the states, repeating the tales that he was recommended by Senator Cole and endorsed by Senator Conness. Having no faith in that version, and being desirous of ascertaining the facts, a party here sent a dispatch to Washington saying, "Telegraph me the name of Bugbee's endorsers." To that answer came yesterday, "Bugbee appointed by President for Conness alone, not yet confirmed." This then settles the matter as to who his endorsers are, but certainly we did not expect to find Senator Conness among, for he was supposed to have known how false Bugbee has been to freedom and to the Union Party. In this, however, it is just possible he may have been deceived, as some others profess to be, but how, it is difficult to imagine, and if granting for argument's sake, he believed Bugbee to be true to the Union Party, how did he prevail on the President to send his name to the Senate? The President is in the habit of appointing his friends, and unless he had some knowledge of Bugbee's recreancy to the Union Party, it is not likely that he would name him for the place. Unquote. Bugbee did have his supporters in the region. The Folsom Telegraph published how Bugbee's appointment was welcome news. The appointment of B.N. Bugbee as assessor of the 4th District is received by the Union Party and, in fact, all parties with feelings of gratification. The merchants and businessmen of Sacramento City and of Folsom are exceedingly pleased, for they know from the experience they have had when Bugbee was sheriff of this county that the business of that department of the government in his district will be conducted with energy and in a businesslike manner. Everybody about here knows that B.N. Bugbee is a radical, sustains Congress, and has not had the least hesitation in making his opinions known, and they further know that he is now doing and has for years past done as much to develop the productive resources of California as any man in it, that he invests his means in enterprises of lasting benefit to the state instead of sinking his dollars in an old stocking and hiding it in a rat hole. We have received several communications upon this subject, but want of space lets them out." Unquote. The political pressure from the people like James McClatchy, editor of the Sacramento Bee, and other politicians was too much for Senator Conness to sustain. He withdrew his support for Bugbee and allowed President Johnson to nominate Major T.J. Blinkney to the assessor position in early March. What was evident from this political episode in Bugbee's life was that he was loyal first to his affiliated political party. It was only after his party's chosen candidate for sheriff, Rooney, withdrew from the race that he had to make an alternate choice. He felt that he could not vote for McClatchy because he was part of the group that split from the Union Democrats to create the Longhair faction. There may have been other considerations for Bugbee to avoid a McClatchy vote, such as the accusations McClatchy made about Bugbee after McClatchy had taken over the office of sheriff from Bugbee. Bugbee supported McClatchy when he lost the Union Democrat Party nomination for sheriff to him. It's possible that Bugbee's endorsement of James Lansing for sheriff cost McClatchy the office that year, as Bugbee was popular in the eastern part of Sacramento County. Lansing was Bugbee's undersheriff, he knew Lansing, and worked with him even if they were not in the same political party. Bugbee could have been more diplomatic in how he couched his support of Lansing, who was seen somewhat as a Southern sympathizer. But Bugbee had not demonstrated any political ambition beyond local politics. If being brutally honest about his positions cost Bugbee the opportunity to move up the political ladder, he considered it to be no cost at all, as his integrity with the local populace was more important. For a few weeks in 1867, Bugbee was a political pawn in a larger national political drama involving President Johnson and a Republican Congress. His feud with James McClatchy was laid out in the open. This was unfortunate because McClatchy and Bugbee had more in common in terms of political philosophy than separated them. The political hardball of negative editorials did not deter Bugbee from continuing to participate in politics. In May of 1867, he was back as a delegate to the Short Hair Union County Convention in Sacramento. The Union Party was still split into two camps, the Long Hairs and the Short Hairs, after the previous brawl in 1865. Bugbee was nominated to represent the Short Hair Union Party for Sacramento County Sheriff at their 1867 convention. As the Natoma Vineyard and his winery were taking up most of his time, he did not campaign very hard for the position. One of the resolutions that set the short hairs apart from other political parties was a call for a shorter workday and a mechanics lien law. Resolved that we pledge our members of the legislature to the enactment of a judicious law regarding the hours of labor and reducing the same from 10 to 8 hours per day, of a lien law which shall protect the mechanic and laborer, and ask them to memorialize Congress to provide means against the importation of coolies held as slaves in their own country and worked here as slaves for the benefit of those who own them. Bugbee was an employer, and he contracted with mechanics and craftsmen at his Natoma vineyard. The party platform calling for reduced hours of labor and a lien law to protect mechanics and laborers went against the interests of most businessmen. The lien law, now known as the mechanics lien in California, allows a contractor or supplier of material or services to place a lien against the property being improved. If the property owner fails to pay, contractors who have filed the mechanics lien have a variety of options to be paid for their services from foreclosure on the property to a recorded lien encumbering the property. Because Bugbee was involved with the Mechanics Institute of San Francisco, it follows that he would want laws to protect men and women who were contracted to construct equipment or perform services from not being paid for their services. Like any other party member, Bugbee didn't always personally support all the resolutions of the political party. But Bugbee could have easily found another political home in the fractured post-Civil War politics gripping the country. That Bugbee stayed with the short hair faction of the Union Democrats indicates that he was comfortable with the social and business positions that the short hairs were advocating at the time. Registry fraud. Before the 1867 political campaigns could begin in earnest, Bugbee was tripped up by another political scandal. As the political parties jockeyed for position to get their candidates and agendas elected to local office, some people were not above cheating to gain an advantage. In every political party, there seems to have been an overzealous party operative that attempts to break the rules for the good of the party. The city of Sacramento had experienced voter fraud in the general election of 1865. With a relatively small electorate, approximately 5,500 eligible voters in Sacramento County, even a few votes could provide a win. The small margins were even more important because the split of the Union Party into the long hairs and short hairs added another political faction to the mix. In 1866, California passed the Registry Act that sought to create a list of all eligible voters. California counties were responsible for creating the list of registered voters, and it became known as the Great Registry. There were strict rules for adding names to the Great Registry. The collection of names was handled by the Sacramento County Assessor's Office in coordination with local officials and appointed party representatives in each of the townships. Bugbee was a clerk on the Board of Registry for Granite Township. Ed Christie, one of Bugbee's former sheriff deputies, was a judge for the registry, and J.S. Mumford, an attorney from Mormon Island, was a deputy assessor for the county. In late July 1867, a day after recording names on the Great Registry in Granite Township, Deputy Assessor Grove L. Johnson received a list of 61 voters to be included on the voter registration roll. Johnson handed the list to E.D. Sherlin in the county clerk's office to be copied onto the Great Registry. Sherlin, who had spent the day in Folsom registering voters, did not recognize any of the people listed as being residents. A.P. Catlin, a resident of Folsom, attorney, and one of the officers of the Natoma Water and Mining Company, examined the list and did not recognize any of the names as being local residents he knew. The initial explanation was that the names had come from Deputy Assessor J.S. Mumford's book, but none of the names were found in Mumford's book of voters he had registered. The list was then distributed to the local political parties, Democrats, Long Hair Union, and Short Hair Union, and none of those men could recognize any of the names as residents of Granite Township. Grove L. Johnson, in addition to his duties as a deputy assessor, was also running for Sacramento County Auditor on the Union Short Hair Party ticket, the same ticket to which Bugbee had been nominated for sheriff. Johnson was relatively new to Sacramento, having only arrived in 1865. He quickly aligned himself with the short hair faction of the Union Party. Johnson was described as, in appearance he was youthful, as a speaker he was flippant, if not fluent. The impression was that Johnson was trying to ingratiate himself upon the political powers in office to be appointed to positions to earn money. To that end, he was appointed as a deputy assessor as clerk of the Swamp Lands Board. Shortly after the news broke that the 61 names of voters were potentially fraudulent, Assessor Ryan called upon Johnson to make a full explanation. Johnson suddenly found himself ill with fever and was not able to explain how he acquired the list for another 5 days. Johnson did write a letter to the Sacramento Daily Union in which he described receiving the list of names from the post office and assumed they came from Mumford. Several days after it was reported that Johnson had submitted the fraudulent names, he requested Bugby and Christie to meet him at his home in Sacramento. They arrived late at night. Johnson recounted to Bugby how he received the list from the post office and handed it off to the clerk's office. Johnson also felt that he would shortly be arrested for fraud and asked if Bugby would go on his bond to keep him out of jail. Bugby said he would go on his bond to the last grapevine he owned. Also in the house that evening was Johnson's little son, Hiram, who had been born in September. Bugby would meet Hiram in court several decades later. Hiram Johnson would go on to be elected governor and U.S. Senator from California. Grove Johnson's delay in clarifying the facts of the names and his late-night meeting with Bugby and Christie were not seen as the actions of an innocent man. Johnson was arrested on July 26 on a complaint of E.D. Sherlin, county clerk. On August 2, testimony was taken before Judge Foote from several people involved in the case, including Bugby. Judge Foote decided to hold Johnson over to answer to the grand jury. Johnson resigned his position at the county and withdrew from the race for county auditor. In mid-November, the grand jury deemed there was insufficient evidence to justify an indictment of fraud against Grove L. Johnson. The Great Registry fraud did nothing to enhance the reputation of the Short Hair Union Party. At Grove's hearing, one of the witnesses, Jesse Couch, testified that he heard that certain people wanted to implicate Bugby in the fraud because he would be able to get out of any of the charges the easiest. The Short Hairs were being called tricksters, and the union men of Sacramento County were tired of being Grove Johnsonized. Campaign Trail. Bugby kept on the campaign trail, attending rallies and meeting some opposition to his residency. At a campaign meeting in Slough House, he had to convince people that even though his much-celebrated Natoma Vineyard, where he had a house, was in El Dorado County, he considered himself a resident of Sacramento County. There were three candidates for Sacramento County Sheriff in 1867. E.F. White, the Union Longhair nominee, Bugby, the Union Shorthair nominee, and Hugh M. LaRue of the Democrat Party. A rumor had been floated that Bugby was going to withdraw from the race under some sort of secret trade between the Shorthairs and the Democrats. Bugby sent a letter to the editor of the Sacramento Daily Union denouncing such an agreement to help LaRue win. He stated, "There has been no trade made, and I have no knowledge that one has been attempted. I am a candidate for sheriff nominated by the Union Party. I expect to be a candidate until the polls are closed on the day of the election. I believe I will be elected, and I solicit the votes of the citizens of Sacramento County that I may be." The Sacramento Daily Union observed that Bugby's supporters were primarily in the eastern part of the county in Granite Township. Outside of Folsom and Mormon Island, his supporters were like angel visits, few and far between. The newspaper understood the electorate, and Bugby lost by a wide margin. LaRue was the victor with more than 1,776 votes. White received 1,768, and Bugby garnered only 743 votes. Like the true political animal that he was, Bugby shrugged off the sheriff's defeat and continued on in politics. He was elected as an alternate to the Union Party National Convention in Chicago to support Ulysses S. Grant. But by August 1868, he had formally become a Republican. Even though the National Union Party was fading away, Bugby still maintained a loose association of Union Party loyalists under the Natoma Grant and Colfax Club. This political club to support the election of the Ulysses S. Grant and running mate Schuyler Colfax Jr. met in the town of Mormon Island near the end of October. The club held a big rally for Grant, with the Sacramento Daily Union noting, "If Mormon Island ever did make an effort to do something worthy of her fair and loyal renown, surely this might be her best." The plaza and all the streets were thronged with crowds of rejoicing people from the workshop, farm, and mine. A new Liberty pole was raised in the plaza, and a 40-foot American flag donated by Bugby was affixed to the top of the pole and fluttered in the wind. Many of Bugby's friends were in attendance, including C.G.W. French and B.C. Quigley. Shortly before Election Day, the town of Folsom was the scene of a big union rally for Grant and Colfax. Bugby was the chief marshal for the event, greeting over 600 people who had traveled in 9 cars on the Sacramento Valley Railroad from Sacramento to Folsom for the meeting. The Sacramento men were joined by another 400 residents from the surrounding townships to parade through the streets of Folsom. Many of Bugby's local pals, such as P.J. Hopper, E.D. Sherlin, and Philip Yeager, attended the rally that lasted until midnight. Natoma Vineyard Visitors. Later in 1868, Bugby was appointed as an agricultural statistics reporter for Sacramento County with the power to appoint 3 assistants. John Bidwell, who had recently left Congress and had extensive farming operations in the Chico area, made the recommendation. Bidwell was not an enthusiastic supporter of alcoholic beverages. In the 1880s, he became very involved in the temperance movement and the Prohibition Party. But Bidwell must have felt Bugby's knowledge and overall contribution to agricultural sciences put him in a good position to lead the Agricultural Statistical Reporting Unit. Bugby continued to win awards for his wines and brandy. He took several premiums at the 15th Annual State Fair for the best 2-year-old brandy, superior wine 3 years old made from Italian and Burgundy grapes, and, as usual, best exhibit of wine from foreign grapes. He also picked up a gold medal for best white wine at the 1868 Mechanics Industrial Fair, along with a diploma for his raisins. The Natoma Vineyard had gained considerable notoriety throughout the state. It was becoming a destination for tourists and travelers to see where the famous Bugby's wines were fermented and bottled. One visitor was a woman correspondent for the San Jose Mercury News who wrote about her experience and impression of the Natoma Vineyard. Quote, "Without a visit to Bugby's Vineyard, my trip would have been incomplete. I am happy to say I have not been guilty of this sin of omission. It requires some little nerve in a woman to visit a rancho that is famous for its tricks upon travelers. I believe, in fact, it is boasted that no one ever left the grounds after a second visit sober. It is darkly rumored that the ex-sheriff regards it a personal slight to his gold medal brands and the numberless lighter varieties of wine and brandies with which he refreshes his guests, if the said guests display sufficient control of mind over matter to be able to reach their vehicles without assistance after taking leave." Unquote. Another visitor to the Natoma Vineyards also commented on Bugby's generous hospitality. In a letter to the Placer Herald, the visitor recounted how he visited the area on the South Fork of the American River and found luxurious growth of vineyards dotting the country along with happy homes. He and his traveling companions spent time at the Natoma Vineyard wine cellar, where they were welcomed by Bugby. "We found Mr. Bugby to be one of the most generous, jolly, and warm-hearted men we ever met in any part of the country. He received us with such words as, 'Here, my good fellow, take a little of this. It's 2 years old. Try this. It is 4 years old. Take a drop of the third. It is 6 months old. And after drinking, you can have your lives issued for half price.'" The visitors toured the Natoma Vineyard's numerous buildings, including one building containing 14 1,000-gallon wine casks, a 2-story structure filled with wine casks containing 400 gallons each, an engine house, and a cooper shop where all the repairs were made. Bugby also called their attention to a pond fed by an artesian well on the property, which had been stocked with goldfish. The portrait painted by visitors of Bugby at the Natoma Vineyard is one of an affable proprietor enthusiastically greeting his guests in a most friendly and neighborly manner, introducing his visitors to the variety of wines and spirits he produced. He was proud of the Natoma Vineyard. He was a happy man with a sense of humor. The quip about drinking his wines and brandies was born of the belief that liquor had medicinal properties. Bugbee actually sold his wines and brandies to the county hospital, where they were dispensed as medicine to the ill. Even though more vineyards were being planted around him, partially because of his success, Bugbee pushed forward with expanding his operations. In the spring of 1869, more wine casks arrived from San Francisco into the port of Sacramento. There were 48 wine pipes, 9 terses, and 15 eighth casks. The wine pipes were long wooden barrels with tapered ends that held approximately 125 gallons of wine each. Terses and eighth casks were smaller. The terse held approximately 42 gallons of wine. An unfortunate accident. April along the American River is beautiful. The grass is green, oak trees are pushing out new leaves, the buckeyes are blooming, the birds are singing, and usually the wind is blowing. The Bugbees, Benjamin and Mary Jane, spent a lot of time at the home they had built overlooking the Natoma Vineyard. In order to catch a stagecoach into Folsom, the two had to walk or ride along a dirt road about 2 miles to the west from their Natoma Vineyard home into the town of Mormon Island. On this particular day of April 26, 1869, Mary Jane was riding on a horse side saddle, and Benjamin and a young girl in their care were walking along with them. With the wind blowing on this April morning, Mary Jane was leaning forward talking to the horse, as one often does to calm the animal down. Somehow, Mary Jane fell to the side of the horse with the wire at the base of her skirt getting wrapped around the pommel or saddle horn. Mary Jane had virtually pulled herself up on top of the horse when a gust of wind blew her shawl across the horse's eyes, startling it and causing it to flee. She again lost her balance and fell backwards. She was prevented from completely falling off the horse because the wire in her skirt was still wrapped around the pommel. Mary Jane cried for her husband, "Oh, Ben, oh, Ben!" By this time, she was off the horse and being dragged behind it because the wire had not yet broken. Either as she was hanging from the horse or after she was being dragged, her head hit one of the many granite rocks sticking out of the ground along the road. She was dragged behind the horse for almost 125 yards before the hoop wire finally broke and Benjamin was able to race to her side. He knelt beside her, lifted her up, cradled her in his arms, and watched her slowly pass away. Bugbee's Masonic Brothers, Natoma Lodge No. 64, F and A. M., published their condolences in the Folsom Weekly Telegraph and Sacramento Daily Union. Whereas our beloved brother, B. N. Bugbee, has been deeply afflicted by the sudden and distressful death of his dearly loved wife, therefore, resolved that we stand, hand clasped in hand and heart, beating to heart with him in his hour of great sadness and sorrow, that by deeds mere than words we should make him feel the warmth and depth of our sympathy, and we rejoice that we can, in her absence, cherish the memory of the many virtues and graces of our departed sister, and add to the good in our own characters and lives by following her example of domestic goodness and love, resolved that a copy of these resolutions under seal of this lodge be given to Brother Bugbee, and that they be published in the Folsom Weekly Telegraph and the Sacramento Union, B.C. Quigley, Committee Chair. There is little documentation of the life of Mary Jane Bugbee before her tragic death. There was one small mention of her in the Sacramento Daily Union for her entry of a crocheted tidy being entered into the 15th Annual State Fair in 1868. The first mention of her in any California documents was when she was listed as a debtor along with Bugbee and Hofteling on the sheriff's deed of sale for the Salisbury Farm property in 1856. On the 1860 census, Bugbee's age is listed as 33 and his wife, M.J., as 23. Her place of birth is listed as Connecticut, the same as Bugbee's. The grave marker for Bugbee in the historic Sacramento Cemetery also includes Mary Jane's death date, April 26, 1869, at 33 years of age. The age of her death in 1869 corresponds to her age listed on the census form from 1860. This would place her date of birth somewhere in 1836 or 1837. After Mary Jane's death, she was buried in the Folsom Cemetery. Sometime after Bugby bought a burial plot in the Sacramento City Cemetery in 1891, he had her remains disinterred from Folsom and moved to the new resting place.